Subway everyday value means many mouth-watering pile-high favorites are $5 footlongs, like the fresh-toasted tempting meatball marinara and made-to-your-order BLT. The $5 footlong anthem rolls on only at Subway, where great everyday value lives. Subway, eat fresh.
The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. You must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Welcome to the BS Report. Another sunny day here in Southern California. It's a Monday, and I'm bringing on the Subway Fresh Tech Hotline, although he's in the studio. We could easily call this podcast two guys who are deeply and profoundly disappointed by their NBA teams. But instead, we're going to devote it to fantasy baseball. Matthew Berry from ESPN. What's happening?
I'm not as disappointed in my team as you are in yours.
Why?
The Lakers?
Yeah.
I think the Lakers still have a shot. I don't think the Celtics do. I think the East is tougher. No one in the West truly scares me.
Fair enough. Yeah, I mean, I guess, would you agree that this Lakers season has been immensely dissatisfying, the regular season?
No question about it. They've struggled to integrate our test. I don't think he's been what we all hoped, but I think hopefully he turns it on in the play. In the postseason, Bynum gotten hurt again. So there's no question. I think it's struggling. I think the bench has not played as well as it has. But I look around in the West and I'm like, Denver a little bit, San Antonio with all their injury problems don't really bother me. I will be shocked if the Lakers don't make the finals. And then in the finals, you see what happens. I don't know. I think I would be shocked if the Celtics did make the finals.
I agree with all of those points. I think the difference between the two seasons, well, the similarity and the difference is the same. Both teams are kind of on cruise control waiting for the playoffs. But
right.
The Celtics don't have another gear. I don't know if they realize that or not. The Lakers do. Like, they're clearly in second gear, and they know they have these other gears they can go to, and the Celtics are who they are.
Yeah, I think that's right. But luckily, you've still got how many more years for KG? 7? 12? How many years are you paying him off?
We have $26 million for Rashid and KG next year and then the year after. We're rooting for the lockout.
Yeah.
The lockout helps the Celtics.
You're going to need to. A lot of people this year are going with that strategy if they want to clear lots of cap space for all the free agents. I like the fact that you guys are tied up with KG and Rashid. Who wants to be in on the LeBron, D-Wade, Bosh bidding? Who wants that? Who wants that hassle?
After seeing 60 Minutes last night, I think I need to revise my opinion that the Nets aren't a potential LeBron suitor. That guy was pretty impressive.
Well, I didn't see it, but the guy is impressive, and he's two things, right? He's crazy and crazy rich. And anytime you're crazy and crazy rich, and you don't care about anything else,
yeah,
right? I mean,
I would throw in crazy tall.
Okay, fair enough.
He's like 6'8" and a half.
So there you go.
People are going to love him. People are going to love this guy. I was into it. I mean, he took the 60 Minutes camera crew to like this Russian nightclub where he was surrounded by 20 women that he had brought to the event. Like, he just doesn't care. He's like, yeah, I'm single. I'm not going to get married. So, yeah.
He's Cuban without a filter.
He's mutant, gigantic, single Mark Cuban. Richer.
Right.
Richer Mark Cuban, too.
Think about that.
It's fantastic. I still... I don't think he's been approved yet. I'm still waiting to see. There might be some sort of murder lurking somewhere that's been committed somewhere.
Dude, there's no way this guy doesn't get approved. With the money problems the NBA has, they might give him two franchises. They might say, listen, we're going to bend the rules a little bit. We're going to give you the Nets, and here's 40% of the Clippers.
Yeah, they should have just given him the Eastern Central Division. So all of the teams.
Right.
Let's talk fantasy baseball.
All right.
Is this your favorite time of the year, or is it still the week before football?
It's actually, this is my favorite time of the year. Fantasy football, which it's amazing and it's so popular, but it's so intensive.
Yeah.
Like August, I don't see anyone. Like from the middle of July until the first Sunday of the NFL season, I have no life, more than normal. I have no life. I don't talk to anyone. I'm grumpy. Like I'm. It's just way, way too much in terms of both information and prep, and in terms of promotion that we do for the site and appearances. And
but the, I would, see, I would argue, years. I would argue that you're more valuable for baseball, because in football, everybody can do pretty much the same homework, and it's not like there are complicated statistics to unveil what's going on.
Correct.
In baseball, you know, I got a confession to make. You know, last week I was thinking of trading for Bobby Jenks in my AL Keeper League. Ooh. And for the first time ever, I went to the advanced sabermetrics.
Wow.
To break down his 2009 season. I was looking at his FIP and his BABIP and his strand rate. I mean, it factored into my decision. Do you do this stuff?
I do somewhat. There's an extent. I wrote a column online called 50 Facts You Need to Know, and I actually think you can get too stat heavy. You know, at some point, you get just way too stat heavy, right? Like, you can make an argument for any player any which way you want if you look at the stats too much. Like,
true.
I'll give you an example of a player, okay? This guy's on-base percentage dropped by almost 20 points from 08-09. His batting average dropped 30 points. And despite getting 59 more plate appearances in 09 versus 08, he actually only had one less hit. He had his highest strikeout total in 4 years. Now, the guy did have a career high in stolen bases, no question about it. But that stolen base total was the same amount that he'd had for the previous three-year total. And as we always say, you never want to pay for a career year. This guy's going into his 10th season, and just you look at the numbers, the down batting average, the down owned base percentage, the more plate appearances with less hits, highest strikeout total, you think, well, maybe the beginning of the end, right? That player is Albert Pujols that I just described to you, which is insane. I mean, he's the number one pick, and there's not a question about it. I believe you can look at stats so much, and you can slice it and dice it six ways. So I look at the sabermetric stuff, but not nearly as much as, you know, I know you had like Jonah Carey on a couple of weeks ago or whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, Jonah's a really smart guy, and I like Jonah. But I mean, like, there's guys like that are great. But in terms of fantasy, I think you look at some of those numbers, but fantasy is less about, I believe, it's less about accurate statistical projection, and more about how you put together a team, how one set of stats, because that's what we're playing with, sets of stats. We're not playing with players, right? We're playing with how one set of stats meshes with the rest of the sets of stats that you collect, and how all that collective set of stats goes against the rest of your league and where value is. And so I think, you know, knowing what to do with stats and putting them together is actually a lot more important than just knowing the stats. Bobby Jenks sucks.
Yes, and I came to that conclusion and did not trade for him.
Smart.
I would argue that there's a historical bent to some of this stuff, too, with career arcs and, oh, this guy, he's like about 33, but he hasn't had a kick-ass year in about 5 years. He's got one more lurking in him. Maybe it's a shared. Stuff like that I don't think you can define with stats.
Yeah, I mean, and I'll give you another thing, right? Okay, so the other thing is you never know what's going on in a player. Like, I'll give an example. Like, you know, I was talking with a couple years ago, I was talking with some guys, and we'll just call them guys in the know, right?
Yeah.
And I was talking about a particular player that I liked as a sleeper this year. We were just talking about fantasy baseball players. And I said, oh, I really like this sleeper. I talked about, you know, I know he's been injured a little bit, but he was moving from a pitcher-friendly ballpark to a hitter-friendly ballpark in the offseason. And I said, you know, I just looking at this and looking at some underlying numbers, I think this guy's absolutely going to crush it. And this guy that was in the know basically said, kind of laughed at me, and I said, what's wrong? And he said, he's got a bit of a drinking problem.
Ooh.
That's the reason this particular player has moved around from team to team to team.
Oh, thank God. I thought you were talking about Dice K.
No. This is a player that's no longer major leagues, and I'm not going to say his name.
Okay.
But I'm just saying, like, and I didn't know that. You know, it wasn't public knowledge. You know, so, I mean, there's stuff going on. You never know, like, you know, is this guy in a contract year? Is this guy, you know, did his wife find out about his girlfriend? Is he going through a tiger crisis? Is he studying a new religion with Madonna? You know, there's things that go into a player's performance that have nothing to do with numbers, not to mention opportunity, where they bat in the lineup, the ballpark.
Well, I think a really good example this year of there's just no way to know no matter what stat you crunch is Adrian Beltre, because he's going from Safeco to Fenway. He's going from a average to below average lineup. I don't remember where the Mariners ranked last year to, you know, the Red Sox. Better, you know, better park, maybe a little more suited for him. It's a contract year again because he basically signed a one-year contract. Like, to me, this is somebody that his situation defies whatever the statistical performance was.
I agree with you, actually. I really like Adrian Beltre, right?
Yeah,
okay.
I do, too. We kept him at $18, but partly because the third base crop in the AL is just inexplicably putrid for some reason. I don't know why.
It's really, really brutal. I'll give you a couple things. Safeco last year, 21st in runs allowed. Fenway, top 10 in runs allowed.
Yeah.
Keep in mind that that Beltre, this is off the top of my head, so don't kill me if I get it exactly wrong, but I believe, like, when he was at Safeco, since he's been at Safeco, in Seattle, he's a 254 hitter. On the road, he's a 274 hitter.
Mm.
So just getting out of Safeco, I think, helps his batting average, right?
Safeco and Oakland, I think, are similar. That if you get out of there, it's going to be a good thing.
No question about it. He's hitting around a better lineup. I mean, he's going from a team that was in the bottom third in terms of runs scored to a team that was top five in runs scored. So a lot more RBI and run opportunities. And I'm with you. He's got something to prove. One-year deal. Hurt a lot of last year, so he had to take what he would, a lot less than he would have gotten if he'd been out on the free agent market fully healthy. Prior to last year, prior to that injury-plagued year, he'd had three straight years of at least 25 home runs. And the other thing, just
I don't get steals.
No,
we'll get a couple.
Five to ten, I think, is what he got. You're not drafting Adrian Beltre for steals.
No, I'm just saying. He fills it up.
But he is a guy that is going really late in drafts that I think people have sort of forgotten about. There's the specter of Mike Lowell, but I think Lowell gets traded at some point. And you know what?
I would call it the ghost of Mike Lowell, since I think he died a year ago.
He might have. He's palling around Boston with the Rashid. But
yeah.
You know, the other thing, here's one other thing. It's just, and this is like, there's no stat here, but look at the last third baseman that the Red Sox have had, right, in terms of Lowell and Bill Miller, the last two third basemen to come in there. They each had like huge years their first year playing in Fenway.
Yep. And the other thing, when you're in a good lineup like that, and people always forget this, you have a lot of those like 16-3 games or 12-2 games where in the fifth inning, you're coming up against a guy they just brought up who's like their 12th pitcher, and you're in Fenway and it's 4:00 in the afternoon and you're pouring it on. You get those at-bats, which you're not going to get in Seattle.
Correct. That's absolutely right. There's something about just being in a winning atmosphere.
Here's a good flip guy. And same thing, stats don't really apply, but, you know, we had a chance to keep A.J. Burnett and really studied it, looked at all his stats, all that stuff. And the bottom line is he had a really good contract here in Toronto in 08. He had, a good first year for the Yankees. You know, he threw over 200 innings. He had strikeouts. His win-loss wasn't great, but for most of the categories, he's in the top 10, top 12 for pitchers. Then pitched in the postseason. Put on those miles. Now he's in year two of a 5-year deal. To me, that's a stay away.
It's unfortunate, but we are agreeing way too much because I'm totally with you on AJ Burnett.
Well, because it's a circumstance thing. All right, he's not going to be good every year of this contract. He's just come off two in a row. He's had some injury history in the past. This seems like a logical year for him to get hurt.
I'll actually give you some stats to back up what your gut is telling you, which is like last year his strikeout per nine went down. His walks per nine actually went up. For the second straight year, he had an ERA over 4. And by the way, sort of an interesting thing, I think with all the Yankee pitchers, right, he pitched a lot better last year with Jose Molina behind the plate. He had a 221 batting average against. The hitters basically hit 221 against him when Jose Molina was calling the game. Jorge Posada called the game. Batters hit 270 against him. Jose Molina now on the Blue Jays.
Yeah, that's not good.
No, I mean, by the way, Jorge Posada's ERA, his pitcher ERA, meaning like what pitchers pitched when he was behind the plate, was over 5.
Yeah.
And Jose Molina was one of the best pitching calling catchers. You know, his ERA was really, really low. He was top 3 in the majors in terms of people that reached a certain statistical level.
Let's talk comeback years for pitchers.
All right.
Irvin Santana.
Kind of like him. Kind of like Irvin Santana. You know, I think this year, I've said this a lot, I think this year, more than ever, you can sort of wait on starting pitching. Because I think there's a ton of guys that have high skill sets, that have performed at a high level, that have for whatever reason this year, whether it's due to injury, whether it's a poor performance last year, are going really late this year, or at least lower than they have previously in their career. So yeah. The high-end version is Cole Hamels or Johan Santana, you know, getting further down the, you know, Rich Harden, Francisco Liriano, Eric Bedard, Aaron Harang, Roy Oswalt, Brandon Webb, for obvious reasons.
Hey, there's a lot of
listen,
them.
Listen, Dice K. Ben Sheets, Justin Dukeshire. I mean, the list goes on and on and on of these type of guys. And I just
so who's your favorite?
My favorite is Liriano, who's been absolutely ridiculous this spring.
And also,
22 strikeouts in 14 innings. He's got a 3.86 ERA. What, 3.86 is fine.
No, I'm saying I agree with you. Yeah. I like him.
Yeah.
And also, I like his age range is fair for him to. I don't even think he's probably like 26, 27.
Yeah.
Is he even that old?
Who knows? With
yeah, but the point is, his best years are ahead of him, and he recovered from the surgery that happened 3 years ago. I think
he's a risky guy. Like, I'm a sucker for Liriano. I always get sucked into him. But he's
a guy
I believe. I'll give you another one. By the way, Tim Hudson has been ridiculous this spring. 3-1, a 1.35 ERA, 17 strikeouts in 20 innings, only 3 walks.
Do you buy the whole spring training? Like, you really factor that in?
A little bit. I factor it in to this extent. When there's a question mark, like, listen, Dan Heron's having a bad spring. Am I worried about Dan Heron? No, at least not till the second half. Okay, I mean, you know what? Dan Heron is a quality veteran pitcher who knows what he's doing, and he's probably just screwing around with different pitches or whatever, right? Or not showing guys anything that they're going to see in the regular season. So I don't I'm not worried about a guy like Dan Heron having a bad spring. But for somebody like Liriano, who there are question marks about, is he fully healthy? Can he throw the slider? Then, yeah, I pay attention to that. Somebody like Tim Hudson, who is he fully healthy? You know, how's he looking? I totally do because, by the way, this strikeout rate is much better than we've seen. Hudson hasn't been a strikeout guy for a while now, and he's K-ing guys like crazy. So to me, yes, I pay attention to spring stats if it informs where the player is. If it informs the questions that we have about that player.
What about the whole, well, this guy's team is going to be better than people think, and he's the number two or the number three starter, so that might actually translate into more fantasy success than it seems like on paper. Do you factor that in? Do you like try to find sleepers for each league?
Some. I mean,
because I like the Braves this year. It seems like people kind of like them as a bandwagon team, so would it be good to get Braves guys?
I don't know that it depends on which Braves guy you're talking about. I think there are some nice sleepers on the Braves, you know, so I'm with you on that. Obviously, Jason Hayward is like all that in a bag of chips, like, you know, insanely good.
It's crazy with the Hayward thing.
Oh,
I compared
God.
It. Seriously, not since Griffey have we seen hype like this. I mentioned on Twitter and people are like, oh, no, it was like this for Delman Young. It's like, no, it wasn't. This is Griffey-esque what's going on here.
Bobby Cox, this is a quote Buster said the other day on the fantasy special. Bobby Cox said he hasn't seen a player this good this young since Hank Aaron.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like it is. It's the hype is ridiculous. But by all accounts, every single person I've talked to is just like, yeah, the real deal. And more importantly, like just a guy with his head screwed on straight, you know, very humble, like, you know, not a guy that they think will get rattled by the spotlight or if he has a slump in the majors.
Great plate awareness.
Yeah, like every underlying thing that you want is just amazing. Power and speed, the whole package.
I like the comparison thing because you do kind of learn when the old-timer guys, like there's kind of levels of, you know, if you say like, I think he'd be the next Fred McGriff. It's like, oh, that's great. I like Fred McGriff. But when you start throwing around like Hank Aaron, Willie Mays, that level of guys,
it's
like, oh, all right, this guy is legit.
Do I like Jason Hayward? Sure. Another guy in the Braves that I like a lot, Troy Gloss. We talk about third base being really, really shallow this year, and it is.
Yep.
It gets ugly quick. Gloss has third base eligibility. Didn't play any last year, but people forget he's 2 years removed from a season where he hit 27 home runs. So, and the other thing is he's going to play first base. Obviously, he needs to stay healthy, but, you know, if you get 25 home runs and 270 out of Troy Gloss, you're psyched for where he's going in drafts.
Well, at third base, you're super psyched.
Well, exactly. He's not going to play. I like Martin Prado. Like, that's a guy that's going to hit for high average, do a little bit of everything, not hurt you anywhere. He qualifies all over the place. So yeah, but I don't, you know,
what's the weakest category?
Jurgen scares me. Nate McLouth scares me.
What's the weakest category of all the positions? Third base or catcher?
I think third base and, believe it or not, outfield. I actually don't think catcher's that shallow this year.
Because of the NL guys.
Because the NL guys, like, for catcher, right, you've got your big three. You've got Mauer, Martinez, and Brian McCann. Then you've got Wieters as a very solid number four. But then you get into a lot of guys that basically won't hurt you. Like, I really like Kurt Suzuki and Mike Napoli. You've got Posada, right? You've got Ryan Domet, Yadier Molina, Benji Molina. You know, there are a lot of people that like Giovanni Soto as a sleeper this year to bounce back. Maybe Russell Martin's carcass can get going for one more year. Chris Iannetta, I think, is an interesting sleeper in Colorado. Like, so there's a lot of guys that have some upside that probably won't hurt you that much. After those first four guys, after basically Wieters at four, they're all pretty much the same. And so I don't think it's, quote, that shallow.
Who do you think is this year's Verlander? The guy who has the chops, but he's never totally just kicked everybody's ass, and now it's finally happening.
Guy who puts it together and brings it to the next level?
Yeah.
I think it's Ricky Nolasco.
Oh.
I'm all in on Ricky
Nolasco. You liked him last year, though.
I really did.
Do you just like him, or are you attracted to him?
He's a very handsome man, Bill. I'm only human, for the love of God. Well, here, let me give you some stats, okay? So first off, he had a, quote, bad year last year, an ERA over 5, no question. But 1.25 whip and almost 200 strikeouts. And that's with a, quote, bad year. He got very unlucky. You start talking about the FIP. He has a very good FIP.
They like his FIP.
They do like his FIP. Which is, by the way, for everyone, it's fielding independent pitching. It's basically the things that the pitcher can control. But anyway, so remember last year, Nolasco struggled very early on, got sent down to the minors and came back up. They let him work out his mechanics in the minors a little bit. Once he came back, 11-4, a 3.82 ERA, a 1.08 whip, and his K per nine was over 10, which was top 10 in Major League Baseball. He was unbelievably dominant. You know, once he came back from the minors, and he's been looking fantastic in the spring, the strikeouts are going to be there. I think the Marlins are a better team than people give them credit for. I really like Ricky Nolasco. I think Ricky Nolasco takes the next step, if you're asking me. Who's
give
that
me guy. Give me the Marvin Harrison type starting pitcher who's in that age range from like 33 to 37. Not someone who kills somebody. Somebody who has that one last. Really good year lurking in him, and maybe it's just gotten boring to take him in the draft. He always goes like three rounds later than he should, or $5 less than he should.
A boring guy, huh?
A boring starter that's going to just have a good year, and you should just take him. Last year it was Andy Pettit.
I think Tim Hudson qualifies. There's nothing sexy about Tim Hudson, but yeah. I think that's a guy that's going to have a very, very good year.
I was trying to get you through that without saying the word sexy, but I failed.
No. Listen, you've already mentioned, how many times have you mentioned Fenway, the Red Sox, or Daisuke?
It's true.
So true. You're way ahead of me.
You're only allowed three sexies in this podcast. So I'm just warning you. You've used up one. You have three.
Damn.
Two strikes left.
Oh, it's very upsetting.
So you think Tim Hudson. What about AL?
In the AL, I don't know that there's anyone that really qualifies as a guy that's going to have like a big year that's boring.
No, I'm saying like a guy in his 30s who he's kind of hit a ceiling already. We've already kind of figured out that we think we know what he is, but yet he's going to go 18-10 or he'll throw 220 innings and have 190 strikeouts. One of those type of guys.
Those guys are few and far between.
All right.
And those guys are few and far between, and the people that have those kind of numbers generally go fairly high. I will tell you that I think Josh Beckett has a monster year in
contract?
Him. Yes. Contract, head on straight, all that.
Well, how do you feel about Lackey, who you you watched and rooted for more than a few years? You don't like him.
I don't like him at all. He's one of my busts this year.
Really? How dare you?
Well, sorry, dude. What are you going to do? It's true. He's unsexy, is what he is, Bill.
He's. Hey, that doesn't count as one of the three
exactly.
strikes.
Exactly. Okay. Squeezed one in.
Yeah.
Well, first off, it's a small sample size, but a 9 career starts at Fenway, 5.75 ERA.
Oh, believe me. Every time he came to Fenway, I felt like we were going to hit him.
And you guys did.
Yeah.
You crushed him.
Yeah.
The other thing is that moving from the AL West to the AL East. Now, a lot of people will say, like, yeah, but he was facing the Red Sox. He won't have to face them. But look, obviously, you're facing the Yankees. You're facing the Rays, two very good teams. People don't realize this, but the Orioles actually have a really good offense.
I agree.
I wouldn't say really good. I think they're.
It's extremely
intriguing.
Matt Wieters, Miguel Tejada, who's an upgrade form at Melbourne Mora.
How about this? Let's see Matt Wieters.
Luke Scott. Nolan Reimold, who can crush it.
If I have
get
an idea.
Anything out of Garrett Atkins, Brian Roberts. Yeah.
I have an idea. Let's see Matt Wieters do something.
Let's see him do a nice second half last year.
Sure. Let's see him do something. We just went down this road with Alex Gordon. I want to see these guys actually do something.
I was never a huge Alex Gordon guy. I think Wieters had a nice second half last year. Hit over 300 in the second half. But I'll give you this one. Here's another thing.
Hold on. I have a counter on Lackey.
I'm not done with my Lackey.
Okay,
Let me finish trashing him.
I have a counter.
Then you can counter him.
Good.
Hang on. Well, all right. So here's my counter is this, okay? My finish trashing him is this. So moving from the AL West to the AL East, because I'm telling you, Baltimore is a better offense than you would think, and not getting to pitch in Oakland Coliseum, not getting to pitch in Safeco. Obviously, Ranger Stadium getting out of there helps, but I think it's a bad park, and I don't think it's a great division for him. He's missed time due to injury each of the last 2 years. The rumors were, not confirmed, and I'm just, hearsay, whatever, that the reason the Angels did not want to sign him to a long-term deal is that they are worried that there's been a lot of miles on that arm. Since he had his first full season, he's top 11 in Major League Baseball in terms of innings pitched. So a lot of arms on that, a lot of miles on that arm. And it's one of those things for me, because he's a big name, because he's on the Red Sox and everything like that, he's going to go, quote-unquote, where he should. And I'd rather jump off the bandwagon at least 1 year too early than 1 year too late, which I think is going to happen. I don't know if he derails this year or next year, but I think there's going to come a point very soon where John Lackey's no longer an elite ace. And
you make very strong points. Left out, though, I think the Boston's defense is significantly better than what he probably had with the Angels the last few years.
It's better. I don't know that it's a lot better. The Angels have a pretty good defense.
Get Bobby Abreu out there, for God's sakes.
Bobby Abreu's not a bad defensive outfielder, neither.
Oh, stop it.
He's not. It's not like we threw Vlad out there. Vlad was sitting on the bench, and you look around the infield, Sean Figgins is a great defender. So's Eric Ibar. So's Meister Asturias. Yes. In the playoffs, he was brutal. Against the Red Sox especially, he was brutal. But I disagree with you that I think
it was an average defense.
I disagree. Hang on. I'm now all angry, and I'm looking up field percentage here.
Until, through 2007, you had Vlad limping around out there like Fred Sanford.
Yeah, are we suddenly playing with 2007
stats? I'm saying we assembled a murderous defensive team behind Mr. John Lackey. This is the strength of the Red Sox this year. Come on, just give me this.
You can have that.
We have Mike Cameron in center. We got J.D. Drew. Oh, one of the best natural right fielders ever to play the game.
Yeah,
Marco Scudero has got a good range factor.
All right, hang on for
a Come on.
Yeah, you got that. I will tell you this, by the way. The last year,
yeah,
seventh place in terms of top teams of fielding percentage, Boston Red Sox. Eighth, Los Angeles Angels of
How
Anaheim.
Dare you bring stats into this?
Just saying. I looked it up.
We better closer, too.
No, we do not have a better closer.
But, this year he's got a better closer.
This year he's got a better closer. Yes, I will agree. I will agree with you. Papelbon is an upgrade.
Wait a second, though.
But you get myopic when it comes to the Red Sox. Let's be honest.
Hold on.
You get totally myopic.
Well, I have one thing to say. Our defense sucked last year. Well, it didn't suck, but it wasn't. It was average, but it was kind of like secretly the Achilles heel to some degree. And this year, I think it's going to be very, very good. It will be in the top three this year in the AL.
I think they improved their defense, certainly. Of course.
Listen,
the only reason you bring on 230 hitting Mike Cameron is to improve your defense.
Right.
But I will
that
say
hurt.
This.
You Bill, didn't have to say that.
Bill, at least cop to this. You are unbelievably myopic. And not at all rational when it comes to the Red Sox.
No, all I'm saying is you gave your counter to why he is going to have an off year, and I'm saying you left out these two variables.
All right, I actually
agree with you. I think Lackey's a stay away, and I would stay away from Dice K, who I liked last year. I think he is more than a stay away. He is a don't even glance in his direction.
You didn't exactly like him. I actually had Joe Meade pull a clip. Joe, can you play that clip?
I did like him. I know what you're going to play.
Hang on.
Go ahead.
Here we go.
This is last year.
Dice is a good value, and he looked great in the WBC.
No, you're crazy on that one. Dice is not a good value.
Oh, I think he is. I think he's the number two starter in the AL. Oh, that hurts. Curious?
Did you see, like, how many people he walked last year?
I'm saying I think this is going to be his best year, a career year for him. Yeah.
Really?
I really think that. And it has nothing to do with, you know, I know you're basing on last year's stuff, but, you know, this is a guy that nibbled around the plate all the time. And that was the biggest issue with him. And he worked up these huge pitch counts over five innings because he just wouldn't throw over the plate and let his stuff win the game.
Yeah.
And he's had, like, a character transformation.
Yeah, that
I watched him in WBC. I've been watching him in spring training.
Mm.
This guy's throwing strikes down. He's challenging hitters, and I think he's a different guy.
Daisuke's not even the best pitcher on the Red Sox.
All right, we'll get the
second best.
No,
it gets better.
You're not listening to me. Let's make this another $10 bet. I will bet you the
I owe you $10 for this?
Yes.
Damn it.
Yes. I want my $10.
I didn't realize that was
$10. You bet me he would win 20 games.
When I said character transformation, I meant character transformation into a broken down a-hole.
Yeah, he has not been, did not do well last year.
You know what deceived me was the WBC.
Yeah,
I hung way too much of my evaluation on the fact that he was playing with his countrymen, which I think he should do. I just think he should go back. Just go back, Dice K. Just admit it didn't work out. Return the rest of the money and go back.
In fairness to you, he only finished 16 wins short of 20.
Well, he got hurt because he hasn't been in shape really since we got him, I don't think. I mean, the word on the street is that he doesn't even, you know, not forget about like dietary habits. Like he doesn't even look at a weight room. Even when he's walking by, he just turns his head against it. Well, that was embarrassing. We need to make that up double or nothing with somebody this year. Unfortunately, it's not going to be John Lackey.
Yeah. I am more than game. In fact, you know what? It's interesting because...
Let's go with Matt Wieters. Screw it.
What do you want on Matt Wieters?
Well, give me what you think his stats will be.
What I think his stats will be?
Actually, you know what? I don't have enough of an opinion on this. Let's go with... Well, we haven't really disagreed on somebody
yet,
so let's wait till we get to that.
My guess
threshold.
Is he hits 20 home runs in around 300.
Well, we actually agree on the Red Sox starters because I like Beckett a lot. I actually like Clay Buchholz a lot. I think he's going to be good.
I think Buchholz is an interesting sleeper. I was in a 12-team AL only, the Tout Wars thing over the past weekend.
I was going to ask you about that. How'd you do?
I think I did pretty well. I like my team overall. I like it a lot. And I took a couple of flyers. I got Verlander and Beckett, actually, to anchor my staff. So I'm putting my money where my mouth is there with Beckett. Mm. But I spent a buck on Tim Wakefield.
I mean, every year we think that last year was the last year, and then he does well again.
He's looked good this spring. He's going to be in the rotation, at least until Daisuke comes back. There's now, I guess, talk of a six-man rotation. I'm not sure I buy that. But Wakefield's a guy that in fantasy, in deep leagues, just... He's going to finish the year with double-digit wins, decent strikeout totals, and an ERA and WHIP that won't kill you.
I actually
and
think
for
Justin,
a buck, you know,
I could see Justin Tozawa ending up with more wins than Dice K this year. I'm expecting nothing from Dice K. If he won 10 games, I'd be delighted.
You should be.
We got to talk about closers because, especially in the American League, it's just the closers used to be at least you'd have like the seven or eight guys. You really, I know these guys. And I don't know if this is the case for the NL as much because I'm not in a league that extensive. But it seems like there's a lot of guys in that range of, I have these closers and here are my two guys.
Well, listen, you know me. My whole thing is never pay for saves.
Yeah.
You know, that because I believe that saves come into the league, that it's one category that it is. A category that in terms of where you have to draft guys, right? Okay, so I'm looking at our average draft results here on ESPN.com, which are free. And right now, Mariano Rivera is going in the sixth round. Okay, the difference between, and obviously, Mo Rivera is fantastic. But the difference between Mariano Rivera in the sixth round and Billy Wagner in the 16th, I don't think that, the difference between those two players, what they're going to do this year, and I understand the injury risk with Wagner, but go with me for 1 second. It is not great. I don't think there's a 10-round difference between those two players versus another position. For example, I'll go first base, which is a deep position, which is a very deep position. And you got, we'll pick somebody like Teixeira, who's going in the first round. And then you go, you know, you go 10 rounds later and it's Michael Goddard.
Yep.
You know, give me Mark Teixeira and Billy Wagner over Mo Rivera and Michael Kadire, who qualifies at first. You know, let's just pick out two names. I'm just saying there's a 10-round difference. And when a guy like David Ardsma or Ryan Franklin, two guys who didn't start the year last year as their closers, end up with the same number of saves as a guy like Jonathan Papelbon last year, it's like, assuming you're not in a deep AL or NL-only league, generally speaking, if you're in a 10 or 12-team mixed league, saves come into the league. You can find these closers. There's lots of volatility. We haven't even started the season yet, and we've already lost Joe Nathan, Kerry Wood, and Houston Street.
Well, and then as we learned last year, there's no rhyme or reason to who can come in and get 40 saves.
It's all
Andrew Bailey. Where the hell did Andrew Bailey come from?
Andrew Bailey was actually good, but I mean, listen.
No, I know, come on.
There's no question about it. Brad Lidge got over 30 saves this year with a 7 ERA.
Yeah.
Listen, you only have to look at the career of Antonio Alfonseca to know it's all about opportunity.
Everybody who ever had a fantasy baseball team had Fernando Rodney on it at some point.
Yeah,
but it was never the year that he had 38 saves or whatever he had last
year. Stupid Fernando Rodney
last year.
But there's another example, right? I'll give you some jinx stats here, by the way.
Yeah.
Last year, tied a career high with 6 blown saves, gave up 9 home runs, previous 2 years combined, 5. You know, and a lot of people have said, oh, well, Jinx has lost 30 pounds in the offseason. He's in great shape. I'm sort of like, actually, he was pretty good as a fatty. I don't know that losing 30 pounds is actually a good thing for Jinx. I hate Bobby Jinx this year.
Is there, and I'm sure you don't like Fuentes either.
No. No, I really don't, unfortunately.
All right, two questions in a row, sequential. First, underrated value closers that you think you get middle later in the draft.
There's a bunch of different guys. You know what? I actually think Billy Wagner's going to have a big year this year. 100% healthy. He's getting to 100 on the gun. Looks great. You know, and like you said, I think the Braves are kind of a interesting team there. I really like him. I actually like Frank Francisco. It's a guy that, you know, in Texas. I actually really like the Rangers this year. I mean,
me too.
Injuries are a concern because he can't really stay healthy. But when he's in there, he's very effective. And if you can get him and Neftali Feliz, who's ridiculous. In fact, Neftali Feliz, Bill, is so ridiculous, I'm going to use my second sexy on him.
Okay.
He is very, very sexy. If you can get those two guys, I think you're absolutely solid there. I love Chris Perez in Cleveland. He's the closer right now with Kerry Wood at 60 career saves, and the minors a great strikeout per nine rate. My feeling is that what happens is that Kerry Wood comes back, and assuming he's healthy, he'll get the job for a little bit just for trade bait, but it's a one-year deal. Cleveland's going nowhere. It's the last year of his contract. So my guess is Perez is the closer for the first 6 weeks of the season and the entire second half. And by the way, if Perez is lights out, which I think he will be, Wood may not even get the job back. My guess is they give him a couple opportunities just to showcase him. But so I really like Chris Perez, and he's going very, very late.
If you're in an individual league, AL or NL, and you know in those leagues you end up taking the setup guy that you're hoping either becomes the closer this year or the next year. Who are your favorites for that? Are you a Daniel Bard guy?
I am a Daniel Bard guy. Are we allowed to say Bard on? Because I like that. I know you coined that.
You can take it. Yeah. Are you a Kevin Jepsen guy?
I do like Jepsen because I don't like Fuentes.
Are you a Matt Thornton guy?
I like Matt Thornton. Although my concern is, in Tout, I actually took J.J. Putz, who I do not think is nearly as good a pitcher as Thornton. But my fear is that because Thornton's a lefty and Putz has done it before, or Putz, I believe is how you say
Putz.
Putz.
Yeah, it's with the Putz.
Because he's done it before, that they'll let him get the first shot when Jinx implodes. And I do believe Bobby Jinx will implode this year.
Who are the NL versions of these guys, since I'm not in an NL keeper league?
Oh, you know, Ryan Madsen's going to start as the Phillies closer. I think he'll be all right. I think Brandon Lyon, Lindstrom is currently the closer in Florida. I'm sorry, not in Florida. Lindstrom's currently the closer in Houston. Used to be in Florida. So I think Brandon Lyon, they give him a lot of money. So I think he'll ultimately step up. You know, Franklin Morales is the guy currently in Colorado. I like him a lot as Houston Street insurance there. So, you know, those are a couple of guys. Mike McDougal, who, make no mistake, Mike McDougal is not a good pitcher. But 20 saves last year, and he's only behind Matt Capps. I actually think Matt Capps will be fine. This year. And Jason Mott in St. Louis is another guy that I sort of like. He's remember, he was supposed to be the closer last year, and then just didn't do great until they came in Ryan Franklin. But I don't think they believe in St. Louis hardcore that Ryan Franklin is a guy that, you know, their long-term closer. So I wouldn't be surprised that if Franklin struggles at all, that Jason Mott gets another shot. By the way, one other guy is Brandon League in Seattle behind Ardsma. Ardsma got pretty lucky last year. And,
to say the least.
So I actually think I think Brandon League is a really interesting guy in Seattle.
What about the is there Minnesota? Do they even have a closer yet?
No, Gardner came out yesterday and basically said it was going to be a closer by committee.
So I hate that.
I know.
It's like the running back at by committee. It sucks.
There's no, those two words in fantasy.
Committee is a bad word. Yeah.
Bad word in committee. No timetable for his return. That's another bad word.
Yeah.
Bad phrase. So it's going to be between Roush, Guerrier, Jose Mijares, who's terrific, but he's a lefty, and Jesse Crane, of all people, former closer of the future, who is terrible.
Blew out his arm.
Right. They didn't mention Nishak, which I thought was surprising, but those are the four guys they mentioned. If I was betting today, I think it's Roush, but the fact that they didn't just go ahead and commit to Roush is interesting. Gardenhire basically said they're going to give each guy a shot and kind of see who's the best fit and everything like that. So I don't think it'll be a committee for the whole season. I think it's basically going to be a tryout here, and one guy will ultimately end up with the most saves on the Twins.
Are you drinking the Fausto Carmona Kool-Aid?
I am drinking the, I was going to bring him up. You know, talk about a guy that's been terrific this spring. His ERA is 0.45 through seven shutout innings against Arizona the other day. Listen, you know, you and I both know Buster only knows his stuff. Super, super smart guy. And this is one guy that every year Buster will give me a couple of, you know, fantasy sleepers just from what he's hearing and stuff like that.
Yep.
Buster actually plays in a fantasy league. So he's a guy that understands it, that gets it more than I think people probably would think he does. This year in four games, in 20 innings for Carmona, a 0.45 ERA. He's given up only two walks and struck out nine. I mean, that was always the thing. And he's not a huge strikeout guy, but the control was always the thing with Carmona. Two walks in 20 innings is pretty impressive.
And most importantly, he's done it before.
Yes, he has. I mean, 19 wins a couple of years ago for Carmona. Listen, I at Tout Wars, I spent my last $5 on Carmona because I believe in him. Buster really likes him a lot, and I'm with Buster on this one.
Let's go with guys in their mid to late 20s who got a lot of prospect buzz, maybe didn't follow through, and now ready to break out. I'm thinking along the lines of the Howie Kendrick, Alex Gordon group of type of guys.
I think there's a lot of guys. I love Julio Barbon. I think there's a bunch of guys that are speed guys. This is one big thing this year, okay? And I think a lot of them qualify. So I think there's a lot of speed this year, and I think guys like that, like the young guys that could kind of go to the next level. I think Wieters is one of them. But I think there's a lot of them that are kind of speed guys, right? This is one of my big rules. I'll give you a couple of stats here. For this year, I feel like speed is really, really deep. Used to be you always had to chase speed. You got to get an Ellsbury. You got to get a Crawford, right? You got to get one of those guys because otherwise speed is so scarce. Well, actually not the case anymore. Last year, 97 players stole at least 10 bases. 46 players stole at least 20 last year. You're seeing more and more of this.
Do you know why?
Yeah, they're not on the juice anymore.
Okay. Just trying to make sure.
Right. So, they got to manufacture runs somehow because they can't.
Got to get across home plate any way you can.
Exactly right. They can't pull what is commonly referred to as a Manny and Poppy.
Yeah. Oh my God. And especially after your 2002 World Series Angels team.
What are you talking about?
Oh my Lord.
What do you mean Brendan Donnelly can still hit 100 off the gun? What are you talking about?
Scott Spezio hitting 500-foot homers. Let's write off the whole decade and just move on.
Listen. And what's funny is because I'm a Yankee. I'm actually a Yankee hater. I actually like the Red Sox because I hate the Yankees. So
yeah.
I just wanted to throw that out to you.
I know. A little hypocritical, yes. Though, considering O2.
Right. But so this year, so because there's a lot more speed, and more importantly, I don't think you can avoid speed in the outfield. Remember, in a standard ESPN league, so not even a deep one, but like a 10-team league, you play five outfielders, so you're going 50 outfielders deep. Well, last year, there were at least 54 outfielders that stole at least 10 bases. you're not going to be able to avoid speed in the outfield. You're going to basically get guys that run when you fill out your outfield. So as a result of this, I think you can target speed later in your outfield. There's a ton of guys, Rajay Davis, Niger Morgan, Julio Bourbon, Juan Pierre.
Denard Span.
Yeah, I mean, there's like, seriously, there are tons and tons of these guys, these really great speed guys that I think are going to steal a lot of bases.
It sounds like it's almost better to maybe look for power a little bit.
Well, I think so, both in the outfield and wherever you can. Like, you're not going to be able to avoid speed this year. I'm not taking Ellsbury, and I'm not taking Crawford early, right? Yeah. Guys like Gordon Beckham are going to steal 10 to 15 bases, right? So I think that basically when you're in your infield, because if you get speed in your outfield, like, I'd rather Aaron Hill or Robinson Cano versus a guy like Brian Roberts, right? I'd rather Stephen Drew than Jason Bartlett, the shortstop version. It's one of the reasons why I'm super down on Sean Figgins this year. I don't like the move to Safeco. I don't like the move to that team. Seattle runs less than the Angels. He has traditionally over his career not hit as well as a second baseman than he has as a third baseman for whatever reason. He's moving to second this year for Seattle. But beyond all those reasons, I feel like you desperately need power at the corners because you're going to get speed elsewhere. We did this study on ESPN. We looked at all the 10-team leagues from last year. Okay. And we came up with in 5x5 in rotisserie values. And the average number of home runs you need to win that category is about 326, I believe. It's off the top of my head.
Hmm.
And the average number of steals you needed was like 224. It worked out to basically you're going to need about 100 more home runs than you are steals to win that category. So you need more home runs than steals, and usually it's like, well, that's fine because not that many people steal bases, but actually, for many reasons, there's actually a lot more people stealing bases these days than hitting home runs.
Wow. Hey, you're right. There's been a shift.
Yeah.
And in 2005, you needed to hang on to that one speed guy.
Yeah.
And now it seems like a guy like, throwing him out, like Matt Laporta.
Right.
Who might hit 25 to 30 homers for all we know. Almost a little bit more valuable than maybe the rookie that you think can steal 20
yeah,
bases.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I'm just looking. Brett Gardner. I think Brett Gardner's going to steal a ton of bases this year, right? Lasting's Millage, I think, is going to actually be decent there in Pittsburgh. You look up and down the line. Yeah. Coco Crisp. Like, there's, like, all these guys that... Michael Bourne, I didn't even mention.
Yeah.
There's lots and lots of guys that are going to steal you 10 to... If every guy you get, other than your first baseman, maybe your third baseman, steal you at least 10 bases, you're going to be just fine. Especially if you get one guy like Julio Bourbon or Juan Pierre or somebody like that.
A-Rod?
Yeah. I don't know if A-Rod's going to steal as much.
No, just in general. A-Rod?
I'm at 3. I think A-Rod's going to be fine. Listen, how does he do in the post-Kate Hudson era? Hard to be seen.
I think he's a stay away. Kate Hudson had an undeniable effect on him and that entire team.
You know what you could do, Bill? Because you're a big star. You have lots of connections. Why don't you get Kate Hudson to date Dice K?
I don't even think she could save Dice K.
Her career, how much would it be worth to you and the Red Sox for her to date Dice K for a year? Think about how much you've invested in that. What'd she get per movie? She gets maybe $5-7 million a movie at this point.
You know what we need to date Dice K? A personal trainer who could run with him and tell him, no, Dice K, don't have that cheeseburger.
Right. Put down that McDonald's.
I hate Dice K. I wish he'd go away.
Yeah, exactly.
He's the Rasheed Wallace of my Red Sox season. Let's talk about the best at each position. The best. The cream of the crop. The number one guy.
Do people really care about that?
I'm curious. Catcher.
Joe Mauer, obviously.
First base.
Pujols.
Second base.
Chase Utley.
Shortstop.
Hanley Ramirez.
3 outfield.
Braun, Kemp, and I'll say Justin Upton. Most people would have Crawford in there. I'm saying Justin Upton. I really, really like Justin Upton. That's a guy that I think, I actually have him at 10 overall on my list. People forget, they look at the crazy numbers that Upton had last year, and people forget he only played 138 games. I mean, Arizona gave him crazy money in the offseason, and most people were like, yeah, Arizona got a deal.
Who did we do third base?
We did not, and it's Alex Rodriguez, I think.
Started.
But I have Longoria number 2. I'm down on David Wright this year.
With reason. Starting pitcher?
I have Roy Halladay.
Wow, really?
Why not?
I'm stunned by that.
Why? You think it should be Lincecum? Listen, here's my concerns about Lincecum. And I have Lincecum at 2, make no mistake. But my concerns on Lincecum are the decrease in velocity, chance of injury. It's not nearly as good a team as the Phillies. Roy Halladay's had an ERA under 3 for 2 straight years. Obviously, fantastic strikeout. And he's done all this pitching against the AL East. Now he gets to go to the National League where he's going to hit against 8 and 9 hitters. His career ERA is 3.43, but his career ERA against the National League is like 3.03. So he's actually, traditionally, like most people, he's a better pitcher against the National League. The Phillies are a great team. Questionable bullpen, but it's a very good offense, and I believe that Halladay, especially considering, this is a guy that's never won a World Series ring, never really snipped the postseason. I mean, this is his shot. This is his shot at a ring. This is what he wanted to. He's a smart guy. He's not a guy like, that's eating hamburgers, and, he takes this very seriously. So I did my bold predictions piece. I said 25 wins for Roy Halladay, and obviously that's a bit extensive, but I would not be shocked if he goes if he has over 20 wins and an ERA under 2.50.
The NL bump cannot be underestimated.
No, especially, and listen, again, we talk about things like, we were talking at the beginning, right, about all the mitigating factors. This is a guy who wants a ring. This is a guy who's never been on a winner. And now he's going to a team that's been in the World Series for 2 straight years.
With great fans.
Huh?
With great fans.
With great, passionate fans. And, a pretty good, Cole Hamels is there. Listen, I like Blanton. I like Jay Happ. He's got a good rotation around him.
Best closer.
Rivera.
Best multiple.
Although Broxton is really interesting because of the strikeouts, but I think Rivera is just so money in the bank.
Best multiple positions guy.
Best multiple positions
or
guy.
As I like to call it, the Zobrist.
It might actually be Ben Zobrist, by the way.
Yeah.
Second base and outfield. I mean, we did this. I don't know if you saw it, but we did this Baseball Tonight fantasy special. We did this thing called blind resumes where we put up one player's numbers and another player's numbers next to next without their names.
Mm-hmm.
And we put him up next to Chase Utley's numbers. And you'd be amazed at how close they are.
I'm not amazed. Zobrist won my AL Keeper League for somebody last year.
Yeah.
And I also think, I thought he was the single most valuable fantasy guy, AL or NL, last year. Because when you have somebody that plays 5 positions, it's a legitimate advantage. That's why I think Youkilis is so valuable. Because, not only will he play first base and possibly third base, but, he has third base eligibility from last year. But he also has outfield eligibility. So you basically just fit him wherever.
Yeah, I mean, he's not going to have it. Euclid is only first third this year, but he may get there at some point.
He may play 10 games in the outfield this year. Who knows? I've never used to count anything about him.
he might. I mean, listen, I think there are guys that are going to be that. Like, Gordon Beckham's going to qualify at second and third after a few games this season. I really like Beckham.
As Drubal
qualifies at
two.
Second and short. Jose Lopez is going to qualify at second and short, third. I like him. Like, that's a guy, as we talk about third base being so shallow.
Yeah.
Like, if you can get a placeholder at third base and get a guy like Jose Lopez, if you've got Aaron Hill or you've got another second baseman, and then, a couple rounds later.
Sadly, Brandon Inge has lost his catcher eligibility. It was fun when he had it.
He's still got his .220 batting average, though.
Well,
so
but he was .230 with 30 homers last year as your eligible catcher.
It wasn't bad. It definitely killed your batting average. I got you a good Zobrist stat, by the way.
Yeah, let's hear.
So last year, 27 home runs and 501 at bats, right? And everyone was just like, "Whoa, where did this come?" Which is, it's weird because 27 home runs and 501 at bats. That's basically a home run every 18.6 at bats. Now, the year before, he hit 12 home runs in just 198 at-bats, basically one home run every 16.5 at-bats. His home run per at-bat rate actually decreased last year. So it's not like the power came out of nowhere. We'd seen it before. He'd just never been able to get more than 200 at-bats in a season. Last year was the first year he'd ever gotten over 500 at-bats. So that was part of it. And by the way, he's gonna play a lot. He's gonna play some second base. He might play some outfield because of another sleeper I love, Sean Rodriguez, having a crushing spring.
Yes.
So I like Sean Rodriguez a lot.
We have a guy who has the guy won last year, my friend Mike, who won for 2 straight years actually. $1 Ben Zobrist.
Nice.
I mean, that's a $35 guy this year. in our league with all the positions he plays. It's ridiculous.
Right, and that brings it back to kind of what I was talking about before, which is that it's less about accurate statistical projection. I mean, that's part of it, but it's also about the value you get. Ben Zobrist for a buck is a lot more valuable than A-Rod or Miguel Cabrera or however much you had to pay for those guys.
Yeah,
that's how you win leagues, is with the $1 Ben Zobrist, with the Sean Rodriguez this year, with, I think, Fausto Carmona, with those type of guys, than it is with paying top dollar for the studs, because everyone's going to have a handful of studs.
Well, it's getting value for guys that either end up getting more at-bats or more saves or...
Right, opportunity's a big thing.
A guy who's a long reliever who's suddenly the third starter, that's how you win your league. And it's so hard to figure out who those guys are going to be. Are you a guy that, with free agent... You know, a lot of leagues have, like, the free agent. You can spend $100 or whatever. Mm-hmm. Are you a guy that likes to shoot his wad in the first 5 weeks? Or do you like to kind of save it to see how the season goes?
I'm more of a shooter.
My
sort of feeling is because, like, I'd rather spend it early and get that guy for the rest of the season and take more shots early than hoard it all for a trade deadline that, you know, maybe a guy comes over.
Yes.
It's, you know, every year there's a couple of guys, but it's rare. And it's only one or two times where you have a guy like what Cliff Lee did last year, or what Manny Ramirez did 2 years ago at the trade deadline. Right, those guys are few and far between.
Normally, it's
that
more
dominant.
Normally, it goes the Edwin Encarnacion route.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
It does nothing for you.
Yeah. I'm the same way. And I think the first 5 weeks is when you can get, you know, Andrew Bailey as your closer.
Yeah.
And he wasn't even in your league. Well, we should wrap this up because I'd like to get this up before the end of the day today.
We should.
Did we leave anything out?
Well, we left a couple of things out.
Okay, let's hear.
Well, first off, the fact that the way you introduced me,
yeah.
I'm a little upset about this because you should have introduced me as host of the 2-time podcastaward.com winning podcast, Fantasy Focus.
Two-time?
We won two. We won Best Sports Podcast and... we won People's Choice, which is kind of the best picture of the Oscars.
Wasn't that the one where you nominated yourself, though?
We didn't nominate ourselves. Other people nominated us. But yes, we definitely plugged it. We plugged it like crazy. You were nominated in, the BS Report was nominated in sports
I didn't tell
podcast.
People to go for it, though. I only believe in awards when there's a real voting committee.
Right. I don't at all. I believe in the popular
like awards.
Absolutely. I'm a whore that way. Are you kidding me? You betcha. Well, apparently it was one of these weird things where we were like, is this a real thing? Podcastawards.com. And turns out it is, because at least supposedly the podcast beat like some real, like Adam Curry, the pod father, and Leo Laporte, who has this, like, This Week in Tech, which is apparently like a huge podcast. And it was very exciting. And make no mistake, we were shameless about it. Every day we were like, podcastawards.com. Come on, go vote. So
what else did I leave out? Because I don't feel like I even left that.
No?
No, I don't feel like I did. What else did I leave out?
Well, we didn't get a chance to talk American Idol or Survivor, which I'm disappointed about.
Oh, American Idol, the worst year ever.
Worst year ever.
Horrible.
And what's crazy to me, and I know you talked about this in another podcast, and I haven't heard it yet, but here my take is like, what it's hilarious because if you've seen like the very first shows, Ellen was the first one who spoke. And then she was so embarrassing that they had to move her to after Randy.
They don't know what to do with her.
They have no idea because she's like, and like Randy's like, it's almost like, I don't know if it's because Ellen's so bad, like it almost makes Randy look bad too, I think, because like watch what Randy says, like pay attention, like Randy will just say like, because at least Simon and sometimes Kara will give like at least constructive criticism, even if I don't agree with it, like they'll say like, here's what you should try next week. All Randy says is like, I don't know, dog, it was bad. It was bad.
No, he has the vocal pitch. You got a little pitchy.
Got a little pitchy there,
but...
I don't know. It just didn't work for me. It was bad.
Yeah.
That's all he does. Is that he just turns to Ellen. And Ellen, like, makes some weird little joke, and then...
Well, don't forget about the stuttering.
Well, that's her stick. She has... It's amazing to me, and generally, they give her Randy, so at least she has some sort of clue as to what to say. Randy said, oh, right. I agree with Randy. It was pitchy. Or, yeah, song selection. And you're like...
No, it's all song choice or pitchy with her. It's like they gave her the 2 points to hit. Here's the thing. If you don't actually know anything about music, you shouldn't be a judge on the show.
That's correct.
You just shouldn't. It's almost... You know, I feel like this is related a little bit to the Kornheiser Monday Night Football experiment. Like, that was a no-win to some degree because people just don't want to hear somebody who's not a former football coach or player talk about football. every time they talk, they're like, well, I know as much as this guy. That's just your natural inclination.
Right.
And that's how I feel with Ellen as a judge. If she's out there, I might as well be out there. I have the same credentials. And she's not funny, so why is she out there?
Right. I completely agree, 100%.
We call her fast forward because as soon as I see her, I fast forward.
She's brutal. She's absolutely brutal. And it takes away from my enjoyment of the
fast forward.
Show.
We fast forward her and Randy, and as I'm fast forwarding, I go, "Ah, little pitchy dog, little pitchy," and then it goes to Kara.
Right, and it goes to, and Kara's not. I mean, like it's like she's like the whatever. She's not as bad as Randy or Ellen. Like that's what you can say about. You know, sometimes she has some constructive criticism. To say sometimes she's a little like.
No, they actually miss Paula because
it's
the
right.
Problem is they have so many judges,
it's too many,
and they all feel like they have to give some sort of advice. So they'll tell people one week, "Oh, you got to take a chance, you got to make that song your own." And then when they mess up and then they take the song and twist it around, they're like, "Oh, you can't mess with that song." It's like, "But you told me last week to take a chance.
Right.
What do I do? Stop it!" They've ruined that guy Andrew Garcia. He's just destroyed emotionally.
Oh my God! Like if new drinking game of any time Carl brings up his version of Straight Up.
Yeah.
It's like, oh my God, you know, like,
yeah.
That moment was so, it was genius. I actually liked Simon
magical.
The other day. It was a great moment, but like, I like Simon's, like, it wasn't the first time you heard Beethoven. Come on.
It
was a cute version of a Paula song. Like, so I agree with it. You're bored until you get to Simon. Like, how
the bigger issue, though, the bigger issue is that they just did a bad job picking the final 12. Like, I blame the judges to some degree.
How much do you blame the judges and how much do you think it is? Because I was sort of looking at it, right? If you were going to cast American Idol the movie, right? Like, okay, so they've got like, you got the indie chick in Siobhan, and you've got kind of the, you know, the old soul in Crystal, and we need the young Justin Bieber type, and, you know, we need different ethnicities.
No, they're missing a couple. They're missing like the Daughtry type.
What Lee DeWise is supposed to be.
No, stop it.
That's what he's supposed to be.
I'm saying they're missing that guy who you could definitely see being like the lead singer of King's Leon.
Well, you're talking about the star quality, but no, that's what Lee DeWise is supposed to be. Lee DeWise is supposed to be like the, you know, and the whatever they got Michael. So we need the Teddy Pendergrass, you know, velvet teddy bear kind of guy.
Well, they don't
we
have
need our
like
Ruben. Like it's all like casting. Like I don't know if they had like. If the 12 best singers were all 12 soul singers, 12 female soul singers in the mold of like whatever Paige, the girl that just got voted off, I don't think they would cast that. You know,
but they
I mean?
But like, they have kind of though. But they've ended up with people who are all kind of low key artists for the most part. Like they had that Rolling Stones week, and I don't know how you can make Rolling Stones week boring. Like they have 300 songs. Like. And that should have been a cool week, and it was just excruciating. I don't know why I'm watching, to be honest. I feel like I should have just given up.
I feel like, too, I'm hanging in this year, but I don't know that I'll be back next year. And this X Factor, like, I'll watch Simon. Like, I like watching Simon.
That's what we talked about with Alan Sepinwall last week. I'm following Simon. He's really the only reason I watch the show. I hang on his every word.
Right.
I think he's better at his job than anybody else is at anybody else's job. And if he's going to go to another show, I will go to that show.
Yeah. No,
I'm not sticking around for Randy Jackson, Ellen, Carrot, whoever, and I don't know, David Hasselhoff or whoever the fourth judge is going to be. That doesn't interest me.
It's brutal. And that's the thing about the Ellen thing is why Ellen? It's not like it's a new show that they can't get anyone.
Yeah.
Like no one had heard of Simon, and Paul and Randy were a little washed up at that point or like weren't really on people's radar when that show started. It was a summer replacement. But now it's such a phenomenal success. They could have had anyone.
Well, you know, it's interesting. There's a little bit of a reverse Ewing theory with Paula. I think we all felt like she didn't matter and she was a joke and she's crazy and oh God, thank God they're getting rid of her. And actually, there's not a lot to say after every song. And she didn't really say anything, but she was so weird that it was mesmerizing anyway. You didn't fast forward over Paula.
No.
You never knew what she was going to do.
Train wreck television, but you loved every minute of it.
And they have not been able to replace that. Now it's a train wreck with Ellen, but in a different way where it's not even compelling.
You're uncomfortable for her.
Yeah.
Especially because you've seen her like be successful. You've seen her be funny.
She should step down is what she should do. She should quit before the final eight. She should just leave. Just say, you know what? I just feel I'm sick, or come up with some excuse.
Something. Just bow
leave.
Out.
Just go away.
Like, what was it in the, pull the, I'll try to out-reference you here. Like in The West Wing when Martin Sheen stepped down to find his daughter.
Oh, good one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like just sort of like that. Like for a more noble cause, you know?
Just do it. It's bad. And the other thing is they don't need four judges. You only need to hear three people talk after a song.
That's
and
very
I don't
true.
Know why they changed it. It was like their weird way of bringing in care. You know, they knew they were getting rid of Paul, it seemed
right.
like, so they brought in a fourth one. But it kind of ruined the show because all we want to do is hear Simon. It's just
right.
It's people getting at bats without Simon coming to the plate. Just bring Simon up.
Right, exactly. Whatever. And Paula sort of balanced it out, and Simon like made fun of her, and like you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I miss her. I gotta say, I do. Miss
I'm with
her.
You. I miss you, and I have a controversial position on one other guy that we haven't mentioned.
Yeah.
I actually like Ryan Seacrest.
Yes, I said that last week. I think he's very good at his job.
I think he's fantastic at his job.
Yeah,
I don't
it's
think
a hard
people,
job.
It's an unbelievably hard job what he does.
Yep.
And just listen, if you listen back to this podcast, what you and I have done, we're stumbling all over words, me more than you. But it's very hard. And all that show is live. It's just to be that clear, that concise. I think he's fantastic at that job. And I know people like to bag on him. But I actually think he's, speaking as someone who has spent a decent amount of time in front of a microphone the last couple of years, it's really hard to do. And on that
especially
kind of,
live? Oh, my God.
Live with millions of people watching.
I'm
and
with you.
And you've got a lot of different, you know, balls in the air. Yeah,
Ryan Seacrest, it's a little bit like the Duke thing where it's, you know, people just, they're ready to just bash Duke. But at the same time, you know, Duke was really good yesterday. I was rooting against them, but how many
so
threes did they hit? Holy mackerel. They'd play, and they had 23 offensive rebounds. They just played well. At some point, you just got to say, all right.
Yeah.
Duke, hey, I got to ask you quickly about Dancing with the Stars, because I know deep down, secretly, your dream is to get asked to be on the show.
Absolutely. Yeah. Of course. But,
so you're watching this week.
I'm watching. I think they decided they had one ESPN slot and, you know, went to Erin.
Somehow Erin Andrews got it over you. I don't know what they're thinking.
It's so weird. She's insanely more popular and a lot more attractive. It's very odd.
I actually had never gone through my whole life without ever really having to watch the show other than when Carolla was on. And even
right.
then, I wasn't really watching. But I did watch a decent chunk of last week, and I just don't get it.
Oh, I do. It's the appeal of it, I think, is the same about American Idol. You know, like, I was watching it the other day, and I was saying, you know, listen, for all of whatever the flaws of American Idol, the brilliance of it is you can watch it with whoever. Like, if you had grandparents, you could watch it with them. You can watch it with your five-year-old. You know, you can watch it with anyone. It's sort of like, it's very clean cut. It's, you know.
But that doesn't fit here because here, you know, you can't watch it with straight guys.
So you can.
That whole demo's out.
Well, you can watch it with straight guys.
It would
just be
weird.
You'll get unbelievable amounts of crap. But, there's very attractive women in short outfits dancing around. It's not the worst thing in the world. You know,
what you need to do is you need to do something to raise your profile to Dancing with the Stars level status, and I have an idea.
I'm all ears. Because I'm stuck in this fantasy world, which I, by the way, I love. Like, I never want to leave it, but, you know,
I think you fake. I think you need to fake either that you were the victim of a brutal mugging.
Okay.
Or some sort of, you make up some sort of rare disease nobody's ever heard of, and you take 3 months off from ESPN.com to fight this thing, and then you come back.
Come back.
And be like, ESPN's fantasy guy returns.
Right. Maybe I shave my head.
His illness. Yeah, you shave your head. You just embrace
like
it. Go that whole way.
Go on a starvation diet.
Something.
Like, come but much more gaunt.
Or you fast. You decide to fast for 3 months in some sort of protest. You had to do something that would raise your profile awareness.
I thought
in an artificial way.
Yeah, I thought about releasing a rumor about, you know, that there's like that I have an X-rated tape.
Oh.
I don't, but I thought about that because that's, you know, listen, you look at the Kardashians, you look at Paris, like
that's interesting.
It's definitely, you know,
like something that happened at the Super Bowl.
Yeah, like something like
behind the W Hotel on Saturday night, some CD footage. It looks like you're with a parking valet. But can't tell if it's you, but it sounds like you.
It might be me. Right, exactly. Leak it to a blog or something like that. Yeah, whatever.
I like it.
Like you may, you know, like, you know, hire some model or something like that.
Or what about just going the whole full? So, you know, you're with a girlfriend that you really like.
Yeah.
So you get married and then immediately go Jesse James on her. start trotting out mistresses left and right.
Oh, God, go crazy.
Another Barry mistress has come out.
Pull a Tiger. He's so great. Listen, hey, Tiger, listen, you're not using that Rolodex anymore. You mind hook a brother up?
Yeah. More women have come out of Matthew Barry's motorcycle shop.
Right. Out of his fantasy stats wood shop there.
That was my favorite. I was reading the Us Weekly this week that Jesse James had a type. And the type right. was tattooed and big-breasted.
Right.
That's his type. Tattooed and big-breasted. Sandra Bullock's got to feel awesome about that, considering she has small breasts and no tattoos. Thank you, Jesse.
Well, you know what? I didn't see the results of it, but I read some of your Cover It Live stuff of the first day of the tournament.
Yeah, it was fun.
I thought you did a nice job, by the way.
I was going to suggest that you should use that device.
Yeah, no, I
kind of enjoyed it. It was you could see the comments to the right. It was fun. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I thought it was great. I thought it was fun to read. You know, kind of over the past and or going back and looking at it. You know, remembering what happened in the tournament. And I noticed that you put up, or one of your readers suggested. I thought it was a great poll. Is Sandra Bullock having a great month or a bad month?
Yes. I love
that. How did that work out? How was the voting?
It was almost dead even, but people decided that it was a great month. Because ultimately, she won an Oscar,
right.
and she found out that this guy that she was married to was a scumbag. So she has a new lease on life, basically. So that, ultimately,
yeah,
not
yeah.
a bad thing. Embarrassing right. in the short term, but in the long term, she now has a chance to find a good guy.
Right. Yeah, no, that's a... Yeah, it's, you know what? I agree with that attitude, actually. I agree with that. I was going to say, like, it's tough because that speech is all about him.
I know.
Right? You know, so it's like you can't replay your Oscar speech, you know, like you want, you know, you'd want
well,
to.
She just has to flip it around and remember that that speech won my friend Sal money that she would cry during the speech. And that's
there was a happy ending
now.
There, right? Of
yeah.
course. Exactly. As long as Sal won money.
Just thinking of her because The Vanishing was on this weekend, which is unbelievable for a couple of reasons.
I've never seen it.
It now has two Oscar winners in it, plus Jack Bauer.
Wow. I never saw it.
Both 2009 Oscar winners are in The Vanishing in leading roles.
That's crazy.
With Jack Bauer, who's like kind of beaten down. You kind of want to tell him to act like a man, Kiefer
right.
Sutherland, before he became Jack Bauer.
Right.
But yeah, this movie came out in 1993, and Sandy Bullock's the, you know, the hot girlfriend who disappears. She's been around forever.
Yeah, oh, crazy.
She's the Nolan Ryan of chick flicks now. I forget who I compared it to her before, but now she's the Nolan Ryan. It's been over 20 years, I think.
Jamie Moyer.
Moyer.
She's the Jamie Moyer. She's a knuckleballer. She's Wakefield.
We better go. You have one sexy left, and you get to plug two things.
Oh, one sexy left. All right.
One more fantasy guy who's sexy.
All right. I'll tell you, Kyle Blanks. I am all in on sexy Kyle Blanks. This is a guy that I really like. Last year, hit a home. He came up in limited time with the Padres. He's an outfielder. Came up in a limited time, hit 10 home runs. Basically, hit a home run once every 14.8 at bats. Okay, just to give you a comparison, Pujols hits one every 12.6 at bats. Had he had enough at bats to qualify, that 14.8 would have tied him for 11th best in Major League Baseball with Jason Bay and Alex Rodriguez.
Hmm.
So he's a really big guy. Like if you see footage of him, like he's a dude. But and people kind of see, all right, well yeah, he's a big guy, power. We get it. He's a free swinger. Well, actually, he didn't hit great last year, but a career 300 hitter in the minors, and actually had I think 353 on base percentage last year. This guy can hit. He can hit for power. He can hit for average.
Give it to him.
I think he's probably going to hit 280 this year with 25 to 30 home runs.
Give it to him.
I actually predicted 30 home runs on the show the other night.
Give it to him.
He's sexy.
All right.
Unbelievably sexy.
Two plugs.
All right. Two plugs. Well, I've already mentioned the Fantasy Focus podcast, which you can download for free every single day.
You can do it every day.
Every single day. Me and Nate. It's a lot of fun. It's a two-time podcast award winner.
Nice. Congratulations.
No. Thank you.
Congrats.
Fantasy Baseball. Play it for free on ESPN.com. Free live scoring. Auction draft capability. I know you love our auction draft room.
Mm-hmm.
We have Fab this year, like so you can like you know how we talked about the free agent acquisition budget. If you're sick of like
love it,
yeah. So we have that. We have watch lists. We have a lot of cool new features. It's all 100% free. So play for free on ESPN.com and follow me on Twitter, Matthew Barry TMR.
There you go.
There's a
thanks for being on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, ESPN Zone, Matthew Barry.
Thanks, Bill.
So I get to sign off. Whoa.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at Podcenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.